What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Brackish Fly Podcast. Today, I've got a guest on the phone, Mr. Brandon Bales of Panther Branch Bugs. We're going to talk a little fly tying. He lives up in North Alabama in smallmouth country. And we've been talking before the show, and I really think this one is going to fit in really well. We'll get to talking about some small creeks and stuff. Kind of goes along with the lines of the roadside series I'm doing on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, start checking it out. Episodes should be dropping about the same time as this episode. Of the podcast. Anyway, all right. So, Brandon, man, how are you doing? And tell us a little bit about what's going on with you.
Good, man. I appreciate you having me on the podcast. Right now what's going on is staying busy at the day job, and then the fly tying at night, getting ready for fishing season's about to kick off here. Fishing season, it never really ends, but the pre-spawn's about to kick off for just about every species, so
yeah,
any minute now.
So, kind of for anyone that hasn't or isn't familiar with you or with your fly tying and whatnot, just kind of give us like a 30, 45 second rundown. Who is Brandon Bales for anyone that doesn't know?
Yeah. So, as far as like the flies that I don't want to say specialize in, cause I'm constantly learning, but, I'm pretty much a warm water, fly tire. I do a lot of, I tie what the kind of stuff that I fish and what I enjoy fishing, and that's, smaller water. I don't go really big on the size of the flies that I tie, unless I have a special request. I mean, I've tied musky flies for myself and for others, but, I wouldn't say that's really my specialty. It's more the warm water streams and creeks, that we have in North Alabama and Southern Tennessee. That's sort of my specialty when it comes to fly tying.
And for anyone that hasn't looked at Brandon's social media, you got to go check it out. The dude is probably one of the best deer hair tires I've ever seen in my life. I'm constantly amazed when I look at your pictures, man. And some of the shadow boxes that you're doing, like with the fish pieces and the flat, man, that's like some legit art. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah. So, those are fun. It's always a nice break from the, cranking out the same dozen or two dozen flies over and over whenever you've got, someone that needs some flies. That's sort of my creative outlet, and it always seems to pop up. Like all things, is like by the end of, this cold weather and winter, I'm chomping at the bit to get out and want to do something different. Those are a nice break for sure.
Yeah. So how did you get into fly fishing? And
I started, I'll go back. I feel like I've told this story and I always feel like I leave out some details, but basically whenever I was younger, probably I was always fascinated by fly fishing. I couldn't even tell you, I never saw anyone in person fly fishing, but I would see magazines at the grocery store, at the bookstore, and there would be some fly fishing magazines, and for some reason I would always sort of gravitate towards those. And I just remember pictures in the magazine. Of course, it was almost always pictures of guys trout fishing out west or up in the Appalachian Mountains, somewhere in Tennessee, Virginia. But I remember thinking, man, some of those creeks in the Appalachians look like the, what is we talked about before we started the podcast, Panther Branch, the stream by the high, by where I grew up, by my parents' house. And I remember thinking, like, man, it would be really cool to use a fly rod there. And I remember I saved up my money, helping my granddad. My grandparents lived in front of me growing up, and my granddad, he didn't, I hunted and fished growing up. He didn't necessarily hunt, but he loved to fish and was always doing something outdoors or woodworking, carving something, had something that had to do with nature. So anyway, saved up some money. I bought a, one of these combos. You would buy at like a big box store. That was probably, I don't know, 12, 11, 12, maybe 13 years old. Got that combo, and it came with a couple of flies. And of course, that was just one part of the equation. It took me several more years to become proficient at casting. That was before, actually, I don't know when I started looking, or I don't know when I found YouTube. But it was definitely, I'm gonna be 40 this year, so I was a lot older when I found out about YouTube and what all you could find on YouTube. But through trial and error, I figured out, how to cast at least halfway decent. And yeah, would go out and to Panther Branch, which is a
All right, we're back. Hopefully we didn't lose too much audio there. Not exactly sure what happened. Anyway, so you was talking about, the branches, or Panther Branch in front of your house and whatnot, and fishing in there. So what would you say your favorite species to catch on fly is?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, naturally, I'm gonna say the smallmouth bass. I just love everything about smallmouth. I mean, there's so many different ways to fly fish for them. I mean, you can, they're based, they remind me a lot of a brown trout, in that you can use, you can, there's certain times of years I will, in certain situations, I'll use nymphs, bigger nymphs for smallmouth. I will use streamers the majority of the time, as long as water levels aren't crazy low. And then, of course, you can use top water, but not only just, there's certain situations, and again, this is in smaller creeks. I'm using even my deer hair bugs. If I were to hand you one, they're definitely smaller than the average, deer hair bass bug you go in a shop and buy. I mean, they're on size, my normal size bug, topwater hair bug for smallmouth is a size 2 or even a 4. I like smallmouth in that you can fish for them in a variety of different ways. Of course, the fight, and they never give up fighting, and they've always, it seems like I learn something from the fish every time I go and pursue them, because I've never, and I'm not saying I'm some traveling angler. I mean, I've been lucky to catch, some, like we were talking before, I've been in South Florida and caught, juvenile tarpon, and I've caught, my share of redfish and trout and the salt, and caught some nice largemouth bass and stuff. But for whatever reason, the smallmouth, it just and they get in your blood, and they've got a trick up their sleeve to get off the hook until you get them in the net. I've never been around I've never caught another fish like that to have all these ways of getting off the hook before you can get them in. And that, that's why I love them. And, but at the same time, and again, this is going back to when we were talking before we started recording. I mean, that's a, even though I say smallmouth are my favorite, I spend a whole lot of time with a fiberglass four weight in my hands, just walking and exploring these small streams for really colorful sunfish, long-eared sunfish, red-breast sunfish, or the majority, the definitely the majority of the species that you find in a lot of the creeks here. And then they're pretty fish. They still fight really well. And the way I try to explain it to a lot of people is, so going back to, it's an analogy I'll give as far as like if you can compare it to going out hunting. Well, I sort of see the smallmouth as me going out to deer hunt. That's sort of like, it's a little more serious. You take more things into account. And then, whenever I just want to, I mean, I have fun doing it all, but when I want to have fun and just catch numbers of fish, the panfish are really hard to beat. And I compare that to almost like when you go squirrel or rabbit hunting with your buddies. It's like, it's a little more carefree. You go out and it's not just one or, you're not going out and shooting one, maybe two squirrels. You got a bigger bag limit. And not saying that I keep fish, which I don't mind either way if people do, but that's sort of how I compare it whenever I'm talking to people about the two, because it's really hard for me to choose because I have these two favorites, and I look at it as almost like big game and small game. You know what I mean?
That's a really good analogy. I haven't ever thought about it like that, but man, the just like
Yeah.
squirrels and rabbit and the smaller panfish, you can sneak up on them and get a little closer and they don't mind. They're not as
Yeah.
spooky. They're a little more curious about stuff. They're not as picky.
Yeah, they are. And you and you know if and there and trust me, there's certain areas where I might come to pool to a certain pool and there might be two, as many as four smallmouth. If I'm lucky and I'm really stealthy and there's not a huge commotion, I might catch two of those four fish. You look at it the other way, if there's a pool like that or an area with a bunch of red-breast sunfish and I catch one and there's six there, well, chances are I can at least have a chance at four, maybe even five more,
If you don't catch the
So, I
same one
mean,
again.
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's fun because there's been several days where, man, I've just had my butt whipped by a smallmouth. I mean, they've been super spooky because of water levels or just the weather has them funky. After they spawn and get off the nest, they go into this weird slump, which I'm sure a lot of species do, but they sort of hang out and don't do anything for, a week or two. And I've come home several times, set my six weight down, grabbed my four weight, and told my wife and my kids, like, hey, I'm gonna walk down here to the creek, or I'm gonna, ride a mile down the road and hop in the water. And that's another thing too. Another reason why I like the panfish is you can. I have a 15-year-old son and a 10-year-old son, and I never forced either one into the hobbies that I like. My 15-year-old is like a sports fanatic. I could never be an athlete like this kid is. My 10-year-old, he loves sports, but he really loves fishing. So the panfish are good because I can just say, hey, you wanna go with me, bud? And he does smallmouth fish. This past year, I started taking him for smallmouth. It's just one of those, the panfish you can involve. It's a family friendly, I guess you can say. That's I don't know. It's
It's
a
a
tough
good
call, but if
starter. Good starter
yeah,
fish.
exactly. It's a good starter, and it's one that more than likely, you can come back to and spend the rest of your life doing. I know, I've read stories and even talked to a lot of older guys, and one of my mentors, Mr. Dave Whitlock, Me and Dave will have conversations just about panfish, and this is a guy that's fished all over the world, and he'll tell you, he's like, you sort of circle back to those things, and it's that, I love the big fishing adventure, but I don't know, the down home fishing is what I really enjoy.
I agree, man. I was fishing just the other day, and every school of bluegill I came across, I could throw a squirmy wormy with a heavy tungsten bead on it in front of them, and they were all gonna go chase it, and I would catch one out of every school at least. And then there's some days that the same creek, same schools of fish, I can throw everything in the box, and they just won't have nothing to do with it. So, I mean, there's so much to learn from just those small fish, and you can learn more about fish behavior on the bigger fish, bigger rivers and whatnot, and learn water movements. Those small creeks and small areas and small fish can really train you to be a better angler for the bigger fish. And I stand
Absolutely.
behind that 100% because you can learn small water a whole lot easier than you can learn big water. But it all translates into, it's
You
just
learn how to break
miniature
apart that
version.
bigger water.
Exactly. Yep. And it's an easier way to learn because typically the smaller creeks are cleaner. You can see what's going on underneath and whatnot, where fish are hanging out, relating to a different structure. So yeah, that's I love small stuff. So tell me some of your setups that you're using, some of your fly rods and what, I know you said you use fiberglass a lot.
That's actually, I'm looking at my rod rack right now. That's all I've got these days is fiberglass. I've pretty, I've got everything from, let's see, two weight up to a 10 weight in
Oh
fiberglass.
man.
The rod that I reach for 90% of the time, most of my rods are made by a friend of mine that lives in North Carolina. Not, shameless plug here, but Chris, or it's actually Barclay Rod Company. He's out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a really good friend of mine. He has, and Chris is, he used to live in Missouri. Just a short story about him. He lived in Missouri. He's always trout fish, but he was originally from Texas, and he fell in love with fly fishing and started designing his own rods. And that worked into what he'd love to do, which was fish smaller water, like me and you've been talking about. So his rods, and even he has the blanks. The blanks are actually rolled and made in Pennsylvania, by another gentleman, Mike McFarland, which is he's like a world-class caster. So Chris can call Mike up and say, "Hey, I want to fish a three weight for brook trout. This is the situation, man." Mike can run out to shop, roll up a fiberglass blank, ship it to Chris. Chris will build the rod out and be like, "Okay, that's exactly what I needed." Like, they work really well together. And in turn, because Chris fishes small water like I do, and that's his passion, that's majority of what I have is what Chris has built me. So 90% of the time, I grab a fiberglass four weight he built me. It's actually the model is called the Driftless Special, which is
I'm looking at that
named
one
after.
online right now.
It's a 7'2", three piece four weight, and it's, man, it does everything well. It's a true four weight, but man, it throws, weighted nymphs, my little hatchling crawls, it throws smaller deer hair bugs. It just does everything. And in the same token, I mean, I use it up in the Smokies for brook trout on tiny streams. I don't know. It's one of those rods, you get one of those rods every once in a while that just fits you so well. And that rod for the past, oh, however long he's had that model out, I think I got one of the first, or probably not the first ones he built, but within that first year, that he came out with that series of rods. I got one, and it stays, unless I'm traveling on the airplane, that stays strung up and sitting on a rod rack in my tying office. So definitely that four-way. If I'm going out just specifically for smallmouth, another rod from Chris. It's a, and again, it's a short rod. It's an 8 foot, six weight fiberglass. It's some special taper that Mike developed. It's super lightweight, but it's also a pretty beefy rod, so it can throw, bigger weighted crawfish. It can throw sinking lines. From now until probably late April, I'll be throwing some type of a full intermediate line is what I use a lot, with a lot of my streamers. It throws all those really well. If the water is super high, or I'm in a little bit bigger river, Chris has a rod he came up with. It was developed as like a big bass rod, but people also use it in the salt, like around mangroves. It's called the jackpot. It's a 7 foot, 7 inch, 7 weight. So they call it the jackpot. And it's a pretty neat rod. So I don't use it a lot. I did catch two of my biggest smallmouth on that rod. But that was sort of due to like high water. I was using that rod because there was certain situations going on. But yeah, most of the time if I'm out, I've either got that four weight more than likely, or I've got the six weight, and I have multiple four and six weights, just different lengths and tapers, but those are my two favorites. So
Okay. And that is cbarclayflyrods.com. Shameless plug. And
that's
those fly rods look
Chris
amazing.
Barclay. I said, really, really good friend of mine. Actually, I didn't know him personally until he built my first rod about 8 or 9 years ago. And just through the process, it was so personable, like with him building me my first rod, which was a little short three-weight, that I got to know him. And he was actually still living in Missouri when he moved to North Carolina. My wife's family has a cabin there, and we met there for me to, I think I was going to pick up a rod from him. Anyway, he had just moved to North Carolina. We got out and went fishing. Yeah, we've just sort of been buddies, have been try to fish together at least once or twice a year, make a trip, meet halfway. There's actually me and Chris and my friend Dave Fasson, and then Nate Carnes, who's Nate. Everybody knows Nate because he does the fish flag decals. That's Nate. So
I was
yeah,
gonna say
we all.
that name sounds so familiar, and then when you said the fish flags, I know who he is now.
He's done. He did the decals for me, like my newest one, and the hatchling decal. Yeah, Nate's a really good friend. Yeah, we try to meet. All of us try to meet up and fish somewhere different at least once a year. So yeah, it's a pretty neat deal.
The spaced out cork rings on the handles are probably the most interesting thing I'm seeing on this rod. And I see I'm a former rod builder. I had to quit building rods so that I could actually go fish. And that is I've never thought about it. And looking at that, like, man, that's legit. Like, that saves weight, probably has a different feel to it, and it just makes it stand out. And it's
So
a
the
conversation.
feel is, yeah, it is. And I'll admit, and Chris will even tell you, I don't have one of his ventilated grips on any of my rods, but I have fished plenty of his personal rods that are ventilated, and it feels, I mean, it's not uncomfortable. It feels really comfortable, but also any, you get so much. I mean, you would think you couldn't get more feedback because it's fiberglass, but you do. You get even more feedback from that ventilated grip. It's pretty crazy the first time you fish one, because it's a pretty cool feel.
Yeah. I'd done I was actually talking to a guy today about one of these rods that I used to build, and for my personal rods, sometimes I wouldn't even put any grip on them at all. Especially a spinning rod. I would just put something on the butt of the rod just to keep it from splintering the blank or anything. And those were some of my favorite rods because the sensitivity was unreal, because you're directly touching the blank, and there's just I use plate reel seats a lot of times on that, so even the whole top side of the blank is in your hand. You're never not touching the blank when you're holding that, even with a spinning rod or whatnot.
That
And
makes
that
sense.
was those were legit, but people looked at them like, man, that just looks dumb. I'm like, yeah, I mean, if you don't want it, that's fine. But anyway, man, let's take a break real quick and we'll come back and talk some flies. All right, so let's talk some flies, man. I know, and this is what I've been wanting to get into about panther branch bugs and how you come up with some of these patterns that you got. So I guess give me kind of a rundown of some of your patterns that are pretty familiar, people should know. Just from, hopping around on the Orvis site or wherever else they're at.
On Orvis, definitely the so I've got in the past, I think 7 years, I've had two patterns with Orvis that are produced by Fulling Mills. Probably the one that started it all for me was the On Orvis, they call it the Bales Panther Creek Hopper. It's just a foam that started life as a Chernobyl foam ant, I guess you could say. I used a Chernobyl cutter, foam cutter, to make it. And I just did something different. Some things, I won't say something different, I hadn't seen on any hoppers I had bought over the years, and that was to have an antenna on the front, of the head. That
Yeah,
was
the
something
picture
I
don't do it
hadn't.
justice. It looks like an extra pair of legs, but now that I'm looking at it closer, it's an antenna coming out the middle of the fly body.
The way they got the, yes, yeah, the side profile. But yeah, if you look at a little bit of an angled picture, you've got the antennas coming out, and who knows? I mean, it's just a little extra wiggle, a little extra profile that fish. Might have just that little bit of extra movement that they want to pounce on. So that really started it for me was that pattern, the Panther Creek hopper, and I had a minnow pattern, which I don't know that it'll be in within this year with Orvis, but it was called the Bales Out Minnow. It's just a bigger zonker pattern for bass or any predatory fish. Had a really good walk the dog action underwater. And being the whole thing besides it had a marabou tail laser dub for the head, but the body itself, the back and the belly were all rabbits. So it wasn't a pain to cast, but it absorbed enough water into that leather that you could fish it without a sink tip or an intermediate line, with just your floating line, and you would be okay. I still like to fish it on an intermediate or, light sink tip line. So those were the two that sort of got me in the door with Orvis as far as pattern. Now, and then I went through a period. I didn't tie a lot of the hoppers. It was almost a relief when Fulling Mills started tying them, because I didn't have to, tie as many, because, I tie in the wintertime, and once it gets warm weather, people have a hard time pinning me down to tie a bunch of hair bugs or stuff like that. So it's a good thing, keep cabin fever away in the winter. But anyway, so not the past couple of years though, that what I call my hatchling crawl has been a big hit, and honestly it's one of my favorite bugs, because I wanted in a lot of these streams, I would see tons of small crawfish, and most time you see crawfish in flies in a fly bin or at a fly shop, they're usually bigger, and people are thinking more for bass. If anything, you might see some downsize a little bit for carp. But usually the hook's pretty stout, or they're usually a little too big, but I wanted something I could throw on lighter gear, something that I could, sight fish with. And a lot of because the streams I fish are normally super clear, and that could catch a lot of the panfish. And yeah, it's sort of, so I tied the first one on a size 10 hook, and I've tied them down to, I had a guy in, was it Illinois or Ohio? I think it was Ohio. A guy in Ohio wanted some in size 14. So I tied some up in 14s, but 10 and 12, size 10 and 12 is the norm for me, on what I tie and what I fish on my lighter rods. And so it turned out that, like we've been talking this whole time, that's, people love all this adventure angling, going on these trips. And most people are like me and you, they're working every day, they're, supporting their family, they've got kids' ball games, this and that. We don't have a ton of time to go fish, and you adapt and you fish what's local to you. And I think that's really the thing for me. I think that's resonated with a lot of people is like, yeah, I've got this creek by my house. I do like to go there and fly fish. And I'm like, well, that's, and two, the whole COVID shutdown thing, I think, brought that out even more. It's like people
Absolutely.
quit traveling. So it's like now you appreciate what you have. I mean, like you're right there. You've been sitting here talking. You were talking about, you can be around redfish in no time. I would love to be around redfish all the time, but at the same token, I appreciate that, I've got long-eared sunfish, redbreast, rock bass, 5 minutes from my house. Actually, I can walk into the woods behind my house and be in a stream, or I can drive 10 minutes and be on smallmouth water. So the hatchling really took off for me. One place which I should have thought of beforehand, but I have sent so many of those little crawfish to Texas that it's ridiculous. Well, Texas Hill Country, and what I found out, and I went there last summer and fished, and hopefully you'll be going back this May to do a demo at a fly shop in Round Rock, Living Waters Fly Fishing. But yeah, those guys, same thing. I mean, they've got a creek that runs right through Round Rock called Brushy Creek. And man, I could have spent every single day that I was in Round Rock there, because it was nothing but huge redbreast, huge red ear sunfish. And but the thing that got me was the, have you ever heard of or seen those Rio cichlids
I
that they
have.
have?
They are beautiful fish.
Oh, and let me tell you, those little cichlids are the, I almost want to, they're like miniature, what a lot of people, when people talk to me about permit, that's what I think those cichlids are. They're miniature permit, because they will, you've got to have this, so you've got to have a fly small enough, and this is why I figured out the guys were using the hatchling so much. You got to have a small enough pattern, but also you can't have a bunch of rubber legs sticking out, because, and I witnessed it while I was there. I just thought guys were joking. I would have a cichlid come up and pick, if one, say an antenna was sticking up or got wrapped around the hook, I witnessed cichlid, those real cichlids, come up, pick my fly by the rubber leg, take it and spit it out its way, and then go about its business.
What a jerk.
I mean, so Chris Johnson, the guy that runs and owns Living Water Fly Shop, the first day he said, he sort of coached me along, and he turns out, so he's got a bunch of my hatchlings, and lot of his customers do, but he also has a really simple but super effective crawfish, and it's being produced or going to be produced by Umpqua. It's called the Rio Bandito is the name of it. It's a jig, tiny jig with a orange or red bead. It's got, instead of like how mine has the pine squirrel strips for claws, his is just two rubber legs for claws, and they're super short. You can still see them, but it's like I said, about you don't want anything they can grab and pick up without getting the hook. But man, watch it. But yeah, so the guys there in Texas, they're using them for the Rios and also the Guadalupe bass there. So yeah, so I know I've gone off on a tangent about the hatchling, but it starts the it that little fly, really, it's brought a lot of joy to me because it's something that I sort of developed on Panther Branch for these sunfish and these panfish, and then I've got to see it, guys in Texas and Hill Country, guys and Illinois. I've had guys in Pennsylvania bound to fish for brook trout up in the mountains, like, hey, we got crawfish here, so I'll try some. It's just,
Is that what's
it's one
in
of
on
those
your
patterns.
Instagram? There's a picture of a brook trout. Is that what's in his mouth? I can't really tell.
From today,
Yeah,
I put a,
I can't tell when it's from the way I'm looking at it.
well, so I've definitely caught, I know I've taken pictures of brook trout I've caught up in the Smokies on that hatchling. I put one up today of one of the, just thinking back on the trip that me and Chris and Dave and Nate took this past fall. We went up to, I think it was West Virginia. Yeah, West Virginia. I was using a little streamer up there. But yeah, I mean, I've used them personally for native brook trout, and I've used them in the lower elevations in the Smoky Mountain National Park for brown trout too. So it's a neat little bug. And so the hatchling is one that people sort of like, hey, that's something that Brandon made, or they might recognize me because of that fly, or and the other one being the deer hair bugs. That's sort of my, and again, it's smaller. I'm using smaller bugs, or I'm tying smaller hair bugs, and I also like them to look, to me, they look classic. That's sort of the look I go for. I get inspired by seeing a lot of older lures or older flies. I have a collection that I've been gathering for years of older bass bugs, and they're, most of them are balsa or cork, but I try to imitate that and, some of the deer hair work.
And your deer hair work is like spectacular. I encourage
No, I
people
appreciate
just to go look. The
it.
imitation of the rebel crawl that you done is like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a
dude,
fun one.
that is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a fun one. That, there's a reason why I don't tie a lot of those. They can be, it's not the tying part's not frustrating. It's the, I don't have a good template to go off of for the lip. So it's, all the ones I've tied, they're still in my personal box because it's like I tie it, I go out to the water and I swim it. And then I take a pair of curved scissors with me and I trim a little bit, swim it again. And I've trimmed, it was one or two, I trimmed too much. And what I have to do is I have to come back, get it in the vise. And I use like a UV resin that's flexible to make that lip. And I start all over. It's definitely, it's a fun one. It's just something, it's something different to do. You never know. And the whole reason is, as a kid, when I would fish spin gear, and even my youngest son, he's got a tackle box full of those Rebel weed crawls, the small ones. It's like that kid can go through and just vacuum up a pool of fish,
Dude,
with
they are deadly,
that little
man.
bait.
So, man, I'm just looking at your Instagram and some of these bugs you're tying, and there's one picture I'm seeing pretty recent of just a bunch of deer hair spun on a vise, and then the next picture is it turns into a long ear.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
Man,
that one.
you're like
That
Michelangelo, man.
one, any of the, that's the thing too. It's my granddad, who my granddad was like, I know you're not supposed to idolize anyone, but man, my granddad, he was like that person for me, and he was an awesome example as like just as a person, but also I think I got all my artistic stuff, I say, came from him, because he didn't tie flies, but man, I remember he would sit down with a piece of cherry wood or anything, and the man would carve he would carve birds. I mean, my grandmother still has tons of them. He would carve bird, anything in nature he loved. He grew gourds in his garden. And he would, and I'm sure you see people do this, but he would train them as they're growing to grow in a certain way. And man, he's got still in his woodworking shop where I'll go and work a lot of times. It's only like 2 miles from me. He would grow gourds in the shape of like turkeys, geese, with longer necks, and he would paint them after they were dried out. And it's like, and I, you know. Nobody else in my family, well, my mom used to paint and draw some, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty, anybody I've ever taken to his woodworking shop, I'm like, yeah, this is my granddad's shop. They're like, I know exactly where you got all the artistic ability. So, I give him, of course, God gave me the ability, but yeah, definitely it was a genetic thing from him. And it just turns out that my medium is deer hair and marabou and whatever else, and I'm just sort of creating different things that I see in nature. So
I love it, man. I'll be scrolling through Facebook or whatnot, and I'll see some pictures of flies or whatever, and then occasionally I'll come across a deer hair bug, and like I can pretty much instantly tell if it's yours or not, because
that's good.
it's
That's
just
good
a
to hear. I mean,
different, you got a signature, and it is it's
oh, that's good.
how
I'm glad
you
to hear that.
shape
Yeah,
the
I've
colors
always.
and put the colors around the hook, and man, it's just I'm impressed, because
Yeah.
I've tried to spin deer hair and this ain't good.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I've always, man, I can't tell you how many times people ask me, they're like, so how do you spin the hair so perfectly? Tell you the truth, I mean, perfectly honest, I suck at spinning deer hair. I have to. So to get those different colored bands, I actually stack a clump of hair on the bottom, a clump of hair on the top. The thing you got to do is you have to have pretty close to the same amount of hair top and bottom to make that line, look symmetrical. Because trust me, for years and years, I tried to just spin the hair on the hook, and it's still, if I tried, it's a mess. It's like the only way I can do it is stack it like top and bottom. And yeah, I mean, it just sort of, that's what clicked with me. A lot of people can spin it, but I mean, I do. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know. People will tell me that when we're talking about deer hair, like, man, if I see one of your deer hair bugs, or I see a deer hair bug, I know if it's yours or not. I'm like, that's a really huge compliment, and I love hearing that. I just me being the tire, I don't know what that thing is. It's just like, well, I'll just keep doing whatever I'm doing. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I'm having fun. But yeah, it's always neat to hear someone say that, hey, I can, you line up these deer hair bugs, I can see that's yours. Like, that's a big compliment to me.
Oh, 100%, man. And there's no doubt, like when you see one, it's yours. 'Cause it's just signature, and I've just got to encourage people, man, to check it out. And we're getting kind of pushed on time. I've only got 6 minutes left on the card I'm recording on. So how can people get in touch with you about ordering some of your bugs and where can they see them?
So I mean, pretty much what I tell people is just like reach out to me on social media. Most time, just Instagram, Panther Branch Bugs. There's a underscore in between each word, but yeah, just reach out to me. And like I said before, I don't stop tying once the weather gets warm. It's just I'm fishing, and the kids have sports. It's just like, wintertime is definitely the time to hit me up. I just finished some smallmouth bugs that are going, or they're already up at Schultz Outfitters in Michigan. They're like a big fly shop. Well, they're conventional gear too, but they're smallmouth oriented. I usually, I've got some stuff like that. I'll send bugs up to them, and they'll have those for sale 1st of March. But yeah, people can just reach out to me on my Instagram and see, how busy I am, or if I'm doing anything at the time. But yeah, and again, people have questions. Heck, shoot me your questions. I'm always happy to answer questions. I'm sort of open book when it comes to the fly tying, and just wanna it's something I enjoy talking about, so I don't mind sharing.
Yeah, you're definitely an inspiration for me, 'cause like watching some of the bugs you tie, especially the hatchling crawl. I've done something similar, and it smashes everything around here. They
Oh yeah, I
some of the
know it.
pickiest fish will eat it.
Yeah, exactly. It's
And
just
that.
one of those, for whatever reason, it just, from the get-go, it's been, I fished it for a while, but, I gave some local buddies some, said, hey, take these out and fish them. Let me know what you think. And it was the one time, that's the one pattern I didn't have to tweak. Once I tied it the first time, is like, wow, this never happens, where it just sort of works first time around. So I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things. There's always, if you're in creeks, there's gonna be little crawfish around at some point in the year, so it'll work.
And there's tutorials on, I'm looking at one online right now, the fiberglass manifesto. And if pretty much how I got to it was I just searched hatchling crawl fly tutorial and it comes right up. And you got to check it out. And one of the rods, the Barclay rods, is on the cover photo there with a brook trout. And that flies in there, the tutorial how to tie it. And also, I don't want to send people away from ordering them from you, but they can order from Orvis on get the Panther Creek Hopper, the Bell's Panther Creek Hopper, and
Yeah, they can order through Orvis's
and you make money that way
website,
too.
or yeah, I mean, they I'll that comes some of that comes back around eventually. So it's like, hey, you can order them off Orvis's website, or in the store. Most at least most places most Orvis I've been around here, they carry them. So
That's awesome, man. I'm gonna have to get you back on and let's get a little more in depth into the fly tying, but we're pretty much
yeah, that'd be
running
fun. I could talk for a long time about that.
Yeah, I'm looking at more
You'd have to
flies
cut
on
me
your
off.
Instagram and like, man, I want to talk about them, but there just isn't time. Like the cicada,
I
and then
can
there's
talk
a there's
flies for a
a
long
an
time.
articulated double hook. Like, oh man, like I'm nerding out just looking at some of these flies.
Like I said, I love talking about them, and the so, just like a lot of people, a lot of fly designers will tell you, I just, you sort of see a not a problem. You're missing. There's a gap somewhere in your lineup, and you just fill that little niche. Like, hey, I need a fly that will do this, or that matches this, and you just do your best to match that, and then you go back and you see how simple you can make it. Less time consuming and all that. You keep some of the, for me, I like to keep some of the realism. But yeah, I could go on and on about the time part.
Well, all right, guys. Check out Panther Branch Bugs on Instagram, Facebook, Brandon Bales on on Facebook, and you just got to see this for yourself to understand. Get with him, order some flies, because man, they're good, and I know they're going to catch fish. So, but yep, and God bless. Brandon, man, it's been great talking to you, and we've got to get back on and do this again.
Yeah, man, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.